Welcome.
I'm Ron Vignac, or Ron Pierre Vignac. And my topic today, I don't see her. Maybe she didn't come back. She wanted the moment of blessing, but she went hiking yesterday. Catch her later. She's on the board.
Oh, right. Stacy.
Stacy. So if you see Stacy, tell her I have this for her. Wisdom is an odd thing to me. I don't even know what wisdom is. How about you? Anybody. Can't go wrong when you talk to me.
When you think you know what you don't.
That's good. When you think you know what you're doing.
Sometimes other people tell you you know what you're doing, but you don't know it.
So it's kind of spoken, huh? Wisdom is normally a spoken or at least written medium. Anything else?
I would think wisdom is when you really are wise, but maybe you don't talk about it. But you have sage advice. True wisdom.
Anybody here? Yes.
I was going to say, to impart some wisdom about a situation that is maybe surprising to people.
Huh. I like that one because it gets closer to entering the gospel also. Yes.
I think wisdom to me is realizing when you don't know the answers, but then you go read the Bible and pray, and then God gives you wisdom.
Right. And of course, if you have to be a Lutheran, we believe that wisdom comes from where? From God, of course.
We heard wisdom last night.
You did?
Yeah. From the group that were up here, the presentation they made.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I chose as my, I didn't know what to do with this session. So I chose wisdom that I like, Ben Franklin. How many know who Ben Franklin is? I know it better than the Gospels. Two, my favorite book that a lot of our Christians have never read, especially Protestants, is the Jesus, it's his name, Son of Sirach. It's in the Apocrypha, or the Deuterocanonical books. It never made it canonically in the Hebrew scripture, but it was looked at. Why I like it better than Proverbs or Ecclesiastes, it was written by one author, well-traveled, well-educated, and Sirach is worth a read, if nothing else. And I'll use some of his stuff when we get to Sirach. And then what about Jesus? What is he a wisdom person? Yes? You guys are kind of reluctant. Say it boldly.
Yes.
Is Jesus impart wisdom?
Yes.
Oh, I think so.
Yes.
Big time. And he does it in little bits and in big stories. Like Paul preached on Sunday on the Good Samaritan. That would be considered a wisdom story. And what is that story asking you and I, if we hear it, to do? It actually has a behind it. Like Paul did. He says, oh, we're all these dodgers. Remember, he used the word, if you happen to be here Sunday, dodgers. We dodge to here, we dodge there. And then he gets to the story of why the Samaritan of all people sees. This is important. Sees the beaten up guy in the ditch. This is the clue to what Jesus is always trying to have us do. Is to see differently. To see the way God would see that person. Like Verlon's work. You want to just say what you do, Verlon, if you're still there?
I work in downtown Seattle, and I find homeless people and try to get them connected to resources, government resources, city resources, and get them into housing. And I only work with homeless people who are like under bridges and encampments, long-term homeless, chronic homeless.
Chronic. And what's the name of the group?
It's called Reach.
Yeah. And if you ever want to know, it's one of those things you should come and see. And if he has time, which he probably doesn't ever have time, but to kind of know what's the wisdom behind what they're doing. The city actually knows what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're saving them a chunk of money.
Yeah.
Woo! Big time. Anybody who works with homeless that has to deal with the police and the mental health people. It's so expensive, it's like you could build that thing next door in a couple of years. Okay?
Okay.
How come I'm just rambling on, Nancy? Ooh. Ben Franklin. Said a lot about everything, but this is the one I love. Oh, unless I lost it.
I bet you know.
It was a $100 bill. I hope I didn't lose it. Ben Franklin, mine.
$100 bill. I have one in my pocket.
It probably fell out because I've been moving this crazy checkbook.
He's got your $100 bill.
Here it comes.
Yeah.
Okay, I usually use that as an illustration. You can imagine the new $100 bill has not a president, but what's his name?
Larry's going to loan you.
Larry's going to loan
it. You have a 100?
He found one on the trail now.
Hey, that's good.
Well, I get a receipt.
Where you on the trail, though?
You didn't find it on the trail. There's got to be a proverb against lying. Oh, thank you. How about the rest of you? You guys got any more of these?
Thanks, we'll take it.
And when I show it, I like to show it because, one, it's money. And we don't always in the church like to talk about it except when we need it and we beg people to give these out. But what was, and one of the sayings yesterday at Ron's session, it was really well done, said something about Ben Franklin and asked people to say some of the quotes. Anybody? Anything you know? A quote. His wisdom.
Fish and visitors smell in 3 days.
Say it again.
Fish and visitors smell in 3 days.
Thank you, Ron. Others, please.
A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
Penny saved, penny earned. Penny saved, penny earned.
Penny saved, penny earned.
Early the bad.
Makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
That's the one I'm using. There's a million of them, obviously, and you can catch them off the web or wherever in books. I want you to, and I was up here and I was doing this thing and I didn't know where this quote was that I was using. And a 16-year-old kid at the table, eating where we were, said, "Oh, that's from Ben Franklin." I looked up. Shoot, I'm 65 years old, and I don't even know where this came from. This kid. And so, you know, we never know the surprise of how people know those things. Early to bed, early to rise, makes, and of course it's man, but I would say man and woman, healthy, wealthy, and wise. My contention always with these, oh, that's Ben Franklin, the action figure. I don't know even where I got it. What does he have the kite for? Didn't he discover something weird, like lightning or something?
He didn't kill himself.
He just had a
kite. He wasn't using the wire.
Somebody said, "You read those magazines?" Self? About 25 years now, by the way. Still out there. This was the original commercial in an advertising magazine, not Self, but it was for Self. I saw this and I almost flipped. This is contemporary Ben Franklin. Right? Healthy, wealthy, wise. How I interpret that, of course, and I have my own interpretation, I don't have to agree with it. I interpret healthy, wealthy, and wise in the crass version that many books have been written about is sex, money, and power. Wisdom, by the way, is knowledge, which we know if you have the knowledge, you have the power. part of what it is to know, and you don't know. And if you know, you can get the price. But look at the woman. She's divided in three parts. Health, you say, oh, what does health got to do with sex? Well, everything. God, and I'm looking at this as the three promises, by the way, that God gives. So the it's kind of crazy, but God says health is a blessing. It's a promise if you follow what I have given you. Wealth, prosperity is all about that. And wisdom to me is knowledge. Now, just so you know what I'm saying when I say healthy, wealthy, wise, this is the polite thing. At the bottom is the actual, is it Augustine or I say Augustine, I don't know how you pronounce his name. Would somebody like to read what I consider a definition of sin that whoever wrote this did? I need somebody to read loud.
You mean from the paper?
Yeah, from the paper.
Oh, sure, I'll read it.
Can you, do I have to go to you?
We thought you could read it from all the way across the room.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was an assumption that somebody would make.
Okay. Now listen carefully. It came out in one of the lectures, actually, this first thing.
Today's women are tuned into more than their bodies. So is the magazine they read, Self. Self-readers are successful career women used to make decisions, and Self's award-winning journalism gives them an edge. Timely articles on medical breakthroughs, in-depth fitness and nutrition coverage, new fashion and beauty ideas, advice on finance, careers, relationships. So be wise and invest in this important group of consumers. Now you can see yourself in Self. I'm going out with this.
Thanks. The key word there, now you can see yourself in Self. And Augustine and Luther and others who followed would have said, that's exactly what sin is. Looking in on yourself and seeing what beauty, you know, you don't have enough beauty, you're too big, you're too little, you know, your buttocks should be this way, you know. And then they sell you the product, of course. And the magazine is just filled with products. Now, I'm not saying there isn't actually healthy, occasionally they actually have good articles. There's some good journalism in it, if you can get by the idolatry. So, how has the Catholic Church approached these three very same promises, if you will? Now, in our language, healthy, wealthy, wise sounds good, and it could be. If I use sex, money, power, how has the Catholic Church, if you wanted to be a priest or a nun, what vows do you have to take? Say it out loud. I can't hear you.
Chastity.
Yeah, the first one is chastity. No sex. Though we know that doesn't work for some of the priests. Or popes, by the way. They're popes and kids. Okay, two. What's the second one?
Poverty.
They don't mean absolute poverty like Rolando knows see, but meant poverty. They get salaries, the priests and so on.
Some of them live very well.
And then the last one? What?
Some of them live very well.
Yeah, actually some of them do very well. And what's the last one? Obedience. What's obedience tied to? Why is that wisdom? Well, it's simply obedience means to listen and hear and then obey. The root word is to hear. You hear what? The word of God. Now obey it. That's power. You have the power then to choose. I love following Heidi's sessions. Normally I don't care for that, but I like the way she presents that stuff. And I recommend going to those. So, in my way I've interpreted this, and then I've done a whole bunch of things on the Trinity, meaning these are the three gods that we face today. Healthy, wealthy, and wise. And you don't have to go too far, right, to see, you better check your stocks today. I check them every day, by the way, the little stock. I get depressed when I see that little red light go on. But
today.
Oh, they went up today. It's sort of a mood.
What are you talking about? The stock market?
What's that?
What was it that goes up and down?
Stock. The
price mostly down.
And I'm retired and I don't have my pension yet. Because the ELCA, in its wisdom, decided to do away with annuities. And so the systems do matter. And, you know, that's for other people to talk about. But I just want to say how important money is. And more than any other topic in the Gospels, what does Jesus talk about?
Money.
Money. Money. Not sex. Or at least not in the way culture uses it. And I think he talks a lot about, of course, obedience. And Luke, or Matthew, is a whole book, a whole thing of how to, the cost of discipleship. You see, the cost of discipleship, the cost to drop out of what you used to do, right? Didn't you work as an engineer or something? Yeah. Well, you could have made a few bucks, you know, helping design something to blow up people. It would have been to your advantage. Conventional wisdom would say, do it. So I'm going with the wisdom of Ben Franklin. Ben has some great statements, a lot of good political ones, and you can read those on your own. This, though, is the three gods of our age. That's my conjecture, is health, and I'll bet, how many people are on some sort of pill here? Somebody's feeding that pharmaceutical stuff. And look at the battle we just had, right? Politically, to get health care reform. I don't know how much reform we got, but we got a health care bill. And as we get aging, even more, then we're faced with the moral dilemmas. Do we continue to live and take this stuff, or do we let life go? And that would take a special kind of wisdom, and I suggest that that would be Holy Spirit wisdom also, to be able to let go when you know you're going to die. And I worked at PLU from 80 to 85. Dr. Bill Reiki was my president. He was a real doctor, by the way, an MD. And cancer, of all things, research. And I remember bringing Mrs. Nakanishi, who came to America with a group of peacemakers, to ask us for forgiveness for the war, and for the atom bomb, for Hiroshima and Nagasaki. She felt the Japanese caused that. And she always wore a hat. She was a survivor, you know, of the, and they're labeled, by the way. They have things where the Japanese are tracking them till they die, to see what kind of result the radiation had on their lives. Okay. Well, Dr. Ricky was just beside himself when she came, because that was his area of study and knowledge and power. When he got cancer just a few years ago, he did the diagnosis. After the doctor said, well, this is what you will need to do, the treatment. And he said, no. He said, no. So I know what this treatment will really do. And you may as well be dead. That actually is part of Xerox. If you got this kind of stuff, let it go. Better off dead. And he chose death in that sense. But he was a faithful Christian. He already knew the promise of God, that even in this death, as bad as it could be, he would be received graciously and embraced, and so forth and so on. Okay. Anything else on Ben Franklin that anybody wants to talk about?
Well, my grandmother gave me a wall hanging that she did at Stitchery, and it was a good wife and health are man's best wealth. And I don't know if that was Ben Franklin, I doubt it, but it kind of sounds like that.
A good, say it again, a good?
A good wife and health are man's best wealth.
Yeah, that's not Ben Franklin.
But the one you like there, I think it reads way different for whatever age you are.
Right.
Yeah, I'm in my 70th year, and it means completely different to me.
Healthy, wealthy, wise?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, healthy is then
the important part of it. And if you got your health, are you wealthy? Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, wisdom has a little bit to do with health, too. So in my 70th year, I just see healthy, and then the two words under it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, under the gospel, you're free to do whatever you want with this stuff.
I could
Ben Franklin was not a Christian, by the way. What was he?
Deist. I have to sit there named Ben Franklin. I remember my father opening up the refrigerator and had this gummelos, this Norwegian cheese. It just smelled. I asked him one day, how can you eat this stuff? And he looks at me square in the face and he says, you smell other people's smell. You don't smell your own smell.
Ooh. That's a proverb. I don't know where he got it, but it's a proverb.
Well, we don't smell ourselves after we eat garlic, but our neighbors do.
Okay, we're going to move on to the second one. Anybody ever read Jesus, Son of Sirach? Oh, that's too bad. Any doctors here?
What kind of doctor?
No, I mean a real doctor, MD. I don't think those academic guys that go around saying, no, I'm a doctor. But are you?
Medical doctor.
Medical doctor. No. And I know there's others because Terry Satin, Terry Sorens here, he went hiking yesterday. And he's an old friend from Luther College. And they live in Wenatchee. And then there was another doctor in the back. He never came back after I said over there.
Well, he's an administrator up in Alaska.
Oh, is that right?
Hospital administrator,
yeah. So I would like to, Sirach is just an amazing little book of wisdom because it is written by one person. And you know, we don't usually get that. And they know who the person is. And at least the scholars attribute Sirach to Sirach, the son of Sirach. And the son's name was Jesus. And I always thought, oh, isn't that interesting? Jesus. So Jesus was not some sort of unique name to the culture. And of course, in Hebrew, it would have been Joshua. So, and that's not a unique name in any of those cultures. Just in Hispanic culture, I mean, the number of Jesus I know, it's like Olson. Man, don't they have imagination?
Jesus.
Oh yeah, thank you. Thanks for correcting me. I would like somebody to read this to you, and to all doctors. One year I was up here, and one of our doctors, and the wife was on the board. He was depressed, and his work was with cancer patients. And he said, "I just can't take one more person dying." And he said, I don't get anything out of the scriptures anymore. And I'm thinking in my background, well, have you ever read about doctors in the scripture? Anybody? Well, we sort of Luke, because he's supposed to be a physician. Sorry. No. Okay, and this is also for people in the pharmaceutical firm. Anybody do pharmaceuticals? You know, the guy's ripping his all off. And now I know you're going to admit it. Well, I want somebody to read this. This is from Jesus, son of Ben Sirach, or Sirach, chapter 38. Yeah, please. And I have it bracketed, if you could. Well, so you just read this in two pieces. Oh, yeah. Listen carefully.
Honor physicians for their services, for the Lord created them. For their gift of healing comes from the Most High. They are rewarded by the King. The skill of physicians makes them distinguished. And in the presence of the great, they are admired. The Lord created medicines out of the earth, and the sensible will not despise them. Was not water made sweet with a tree in order that its power might be known? And he gave skill to human beings that he might be glorified in his marvelous works. By them the physician heals and takes away pain. The pharmacist makes a mixture from them. God's works will never be finished. And from him health spreads over all the earth. My child, when you are ill, do not delay. that pray to the Lord and he will heal you. Give up your faults and direct your hands rightly and cleanse your heart from all sin. Offer a sweet-smelling sacrifice and a memorial portion of choice flour, and pour oil on your offering, as much as you can afford. Then give the physician his place, for the Lord created him. Do not let him leave you, for you need him. There may come a time when recovery lies in the hands of physicians, for they too pray to the Lord that he will grant them success in diagnosis and in healing for the sake of preserving life. He who sins against his maker will be defiant towards the physician.
Thank you. I suggest that's just an incredible piece to be in our scriptures. And by the way, I always buy, when I buy my Bibles, I buy the NRSVP because it's the one we use a lot in this church. But always with the Apocrypha. And Sirach is one of those books that just didn't make it into the main piece. Isn't that, what did you think, Doctor? And of course, in our tradition, our culture, what we have done something not good for physicians. What have we basically done to them, women and men?
Sue them.
Well, we sue them. Yeah. Or we hold them in what kind of esteem? Such high esteem. I mean, they almost like gods to some people. And pharmaceuticals, we already know what a mess that is. Are you in the pharmaceutical business?
I'm a pharmacy tech.
Oh, you are a pharmacist. let's try to appreciate her. Give her a hand. In fact, you know, I was one of those used to criticize all those pills you had to take. So now I got six of them. My God. And I love the pharmacist in my little Walgreens place. And he's always generous to me. And he's Indian, he's not Caucasian. And then there's the others. And they always ask, how are you doing? Do you need it? You know, is this working? You know, on. Well, thank you for admitting it.
Well, all I know is that you take one drug and you weigh the goods and the good parts and the bad part. Do I want to take this drug? It causes diabetes, but I'll be okay. You don't want to take this drug, I might die in 3 years, but my heart will be better. Then it says, take this drug, it'll relieve anxiety, but it'll cause anxiety.
Yeah. Well, like the drugs that you may have muscle cramps, and if you do, you should tell your doctor. I'll be honest, when I started getting some muscle cramps, I did the other thing. I threw the medicine in a trash can. All the blood pressure medicine after I had my heart surgery, threw it in the trash can.
Well, just for the sake of, I'll just read a few things from Sirach, because you don't have it in the Bible. We don't have that in our Bibles here enough. I wish we did, but we don't. This one I rarely read in public. And part of it is, it's too hard. It attacks us at our cultural worst. And if you deal with, as a few people here do, people in low income, poverty, however you describe them. I don't even like to use low income, because that's not really the reality of the folks that we deal with. They have needs and resources. But listen to Sirach, who traveled much, by the way, and saw this. I've never had the courage to preach on it. He says in chapter 34, like one who kills a son before his father's eyes, is the person who offers a sacrifice from the property of the poor. The bread of the needy is the life of the poor. Whoever deprives them of it is a murderer. To take away a neighbor's living, possession. To take away a neighbor's living is to commit murder. To deprive an employee of wages is to shed blood. That's not what you call a cheery introduction into economics. But if you follow... Excuse me?
What were you reading from there?
I'm reading from the book of Sirach.
Okay.
And it's chapter 34. Okay. I've never read something quite as devastating in language. It's through the prophets get at it. You know, they're pretty hard-nosed guys, right? Yes, they are. And they even threaten you. You don't want to change? You're going to get it, buddy. You're going to get it. I mean, Jeremiah, any of them, Amos, you know, we all like Isaiah because at the end it's really nice and cheery. You know, the new city is Salishan, where everybody can have a little tree to sit under and eat their grapes or whatever the heck they promise there. I love Isaiah, by the way. But Sirach hits at a level that I think breaks through what Franz Kafka once said. You know who Franz Kafka is? Kafka is the writer. Yeah. If you're young enough or you went to college somewhere, you had to read The Plague or what else did he write? Who? I don't remember. But anyway, Kafka said this, a book should be like an ice axe that breaks the frozen ice within us. I love that. I've always loved that statement. A book should be like an ice axe that breaks the frozen ice within us. There's something in us, no matter how many times we read the prophets and Jesus, and we don't give that $100 away. Just hold on to it. And Luther would have said that. He said, the last conversion is your pocket. Yeah, you can believe in Jesus, you can believe in God and grace, but what are you doing with your money? And then this stuff really comes out in a lot of our sessions here. If you listen carefully, what happens when we make bad policy statements that hurt people? And what he's saying is, you're basically a murderer. That doesn't go away well with some of our folks. I just want you to know that. Okay.
Ron?
Yes.
This is reminding me of Luther's explanation of the fifth commandment. I mean, I just went out and got that.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, we're to fear, you should not murder. We're to fear and love God so that we neither endanger nor harm the lives of our neighbors, but instead help and support them in all of life's needs. And you go to the large catechism, that's spelled out even way more, and it relates to people's ability to earn a living. And
oh, yeah, Luther, I would. That's why I asked you yesterday when you read Give Us Thy Daily Bread. He didn't mean just bread, according to Luther now.
Right.
It meant all of the stuff. Yeah. Housing, friends, spouse, job, da-da-da-da-da, and other things like this.
Yeah, and seventh commandment, you know, is reinforces that to, that we shouldn't take our neighbor's money or property nor acquire them by using shoddy merchandise or crooked deals, but instead help them to improve and protect their property and income.
Right.
And that's the small catechism explanation of the seventh commandment.
Yeah, the large one is worth a read. In fact, I've used the large, not telling people who wrote this particular piece on Thou Shalt Not Steal. Oh, it is devastating. Because he just saw Germany as just a bunch of thieves. Everybody's a thief in this culture. And you can just see. And then the way he does it, he says, but don't mock God, because the poor have the audience with the Holy Spirit, and you will be sorry if you treat the poor the way you're doing. And that's why Luther often said, and I said this to you, Sam Torvin, a religion prophet, he's written a whole book on this, on ethics of Luther, as it does to, and in the church, when you take the collection, he said at the end of the service, give the money out to the people who need it. Get right. How many churches do that here? You already got the guy or the woman with the money in the back counting it and figure out how much you're going to put this, that, this, and the other thing. So what we did in our little mission church. And I don't even have an offering. I don't even send the plate around. We stopped doing that. We have a heart box, and it'd be like community chest. You know, put your money in if you got any. Originally, they didn't have any money. So what are you going to ask them for? But we always preach stewardship of their gifts, of their talents, you know, that kind of stuff. So then I said, and then again, a lot of these poor folks were coming in, or felons, who didn't have work, and they needed this, that, and the other. Or they needed a pair of shoes to go to work. So we would divide most of the money after the service. Now, does it get abused? Yes. So what's the big secret there? We're sinful. You either got to get over that because God got over it, forgave us. The radicality of grace is almost too much for some of us. So I'm off track here. Let's go back to Sirach. Got some great stuff on poverty and the poor, on death. This one, especially on the moment of blessings and other things. Give graciously to all the living, but do not withhold kindness even from the dead. Do not avoid those who weep, but mourn with those who mourn. Doesn't that sound a little New Testament-y? Testament? Remember that one, Paul? When you rejoice, we rejoice. When you mourn, we grieve with you. Or when you're suffering. Comes out of this. And they would have known Sirach, by the way. And Luther knew Sirach. Quoted it, Paul. Do not avoid those who weep, but mourn with those who mourn. Do not hesitate to visit the sick, because for such deeds you will be loved. To all you do, remember, says Sirach, the end of your life. And then you will never sin. Does it sound proverbial to you? Don't even withhold from the dead. Don't withhold. And that's kind of what we were doing with these moments. Who cares? It's another dead person. And half of them are goofs anyway. Who needs to remember them? And I would suggest, Sirach would say, that's what you're supposed to do. And so a lot of wisdom literature courses is the supposed to do or should do. Okay. Anybody want to comment on that one? No? We're getting quiet. I don't have any funny ones in this book. No? Okay. Sirach, at the very beginning, lets us know what this whole book is. All wisdom is from the Lord, and with him it remains forever. The sand of the sea, the drops of rain, the days of eternity, who can count them? The height of heaven and the breadth of earth. This is Sirach saying this. The abyss, and wisdom. Who can search them out? Wisdom was created before all other things. And I would say a lot of what we do up here at Holden has that note. It includes the stars, the earth, the water, and then how do we treat each other? How do we weave our faith and our faith claims together in a daily life? And I would suggest the hard thing, and a lot of our young people are looking desperately, how do I live this life? And as Ron
Sharon.
Yeah, he's excellent sessions, by the way, of the shift in the whole culture, not just locally, but globally, to where, how are they going to understand this faith that some of us older people got through who? Who gave you your faith claim kind of thing? Grandma, mom, maybe mom. The younger ones, though, that's not true. And in our communities of people who are poor, that's not true. When we started in 1985 in South Shan, oh, by the way, there was a pack. Just so you know.
We
moved too fast.
just to show some of the cultures that live there. When we started there, we had nobody. We just started blank. No place. We used the East Side Center, which was a dump, but they had the community care center in there, which had a separate thing. And they're friends to this day. And just rebuilt a $7 million community health care center. Just gorgeous. And I was on their committees and supported them. And I did funerals for some of their staff workers. From a pharmacy, by the way. One son, 32 years old, died of, what do you call that, oxycodone? Or one of those oxy things. And, who do you think the poor are willing to give over to you in ministry in these communities?
Children.
So we had children. We had a lot of children. And I finally got a van for that, a 1986 Toyota van, where the seats could be taken out when we collected the food. And it was kids after kids. And after a few years, I realized this is not doing it, because we weren't getting to usually mom, and occasionally a father was present, but not often, at least not those years. So I think the question of how do we impart the wisdom that gives life so that they can choose that. So when you ask some people, well, how come these kids choose to go into the gangs or choose this? And, when I work with them, I can't say that to the public because they get mad. It's not all the knuckleheads. The knuckleheads choose wrongly. And it takes about 2 weeks before the police are on them and so forth and so on. But the systems don't even work for them, right? The systems don't work for them. In our low-income East Tacoma, South Shant area, the police, if you're a young kid and you're drinking, say, and they'll pick you up, they won't bring you home. Where do they bring you? To the juvenile detention center. In Tacoma, it would be Remen Hall. I had parents come to me from Puyallup, which is pretty nice, basically homogeneous, middle class Caucasian. Well, that's changing. And who came to me when I visit their church and say, I wish the police here would do that to our kids that break the law. Because what did the police then, not now, then do if they caught a kid drinking on the street illegally? Did they take him to the detention home or take him home? Now, most of us would like this, but they took him home. Told mom or dad, and there was a dad often, your kid is being stupid. Do something about it. And so what happens then systemically? Our kids start off with simple things, like driving without a license. Many of them do, 14, they're driving around there. They take their mother's car or something, and they get picked up. The second time, it usually has something in the car, marijuana or something. Third time, if they now have progressed into that violent stage, guns. And all of a sudden, these kids at 14, 15, 16 are starting to generate a criminal history of which you can't just erase. In the scripture, Paul talks about erasing, not just crossing out. The cross was the way that you knew you eliminated the debt. But in Paul, there's another word which is that actually erases the actual text. He says, that's what God does with us. So the sin is not remembered. The felons we work with, they almost seem to be felons forever, no matter what they did. I just got an email today from this John Sakuda. He's a felon, has a girlfriend. They have no children, but she brings her dog to church. Who used to have these dogs in church? I liked it better than some of the people. And so he writes this. He says, well, I hope you and Nancy have a great time up there. He just got graduated at one of those conservative little covenant seminaries in Tacoma. And I went to it for Bible studies because he wants to be a preacher. I warned him, but he didn't listen. So at the very end, Nancy, he says this, and he often will say, and praise God. But what he did is he wrote, and praise God, P-R-A-Y-S. I mean, it's kind of a slip of the tongue, but in a lot of communities, it's that funny language change, because that's how he lives out his life, in deep prayer for all. And then I promised him, I'm trying to get rid of my library. Nobody wants these stupid books that I bought at a very great expense. Anybody have that problem?
Yes.
Nobody wants them.
Send them to Holden.
Not even from bookstores.
No, Holden doesn't want them. Oh.
I mention this because I was here with Dan Ruin not too long ago, in September. Well, you guys don't even know it, but they had the pastor's thing up here. And it was Dan Ruin and Fred Nieder. And Nieder, by the way, if you want a Bible study, not what I'm doing. He's great. He's just, you get a chance, you know, listen to him. But two, Dan Ruin is this young Nancy, remember? He's on staff here. He's a pastor now. And we know his father, Ed Ruin, from St. Peter's in the Bronx, one of the worst parish locations you can imagine. It was hell. And very dangerous. And when Nancy and I were teachers, I was asked to be the principal. Now, I've always had the wisdom to know, you don't want me as a principal. You just wouldn't want me as a principal. And even at the school we were at, they thought, well, maybe you could be principal, Pastor Ron. I mean, I wasn't Pastor Ron Vignette. I said, no, you know why? Because I would have fired everybody. It's the way I am. And when we applied for this job up here, that Paul and Tom and Carol got, we were the runner-uppers. And one of the questions they asked us in the interview in Minneapolis, what's your leadership style? I said, benevolent tyrant. That's kind of basically my style in anything. And so I got one of those weird genes that she talks about. Okay, forget that. Where was I going with that?
Do you know?
Well, I got a way to get rid of the books.
Oh, books!
My wife does that.
She
reads a really good book, and if her girlfriends don't want it, she takes it to, puts it on a park bench by where the bus stops, and she just put one down there, and she says, you know, people can't wait to grab it.
How about textbooks? Uses what you used to. They sell back for a fraction.
We don't get any money.
So Dan Ruin, he was doing his life, and he was good. I enjoyed him a lot. And he, they mentioned Gerhard Kittel, and somehow it was the Nazis, and the ones who never never changed. There were some that did, but most, many of them didn't. And one of them was Gerhard Kittel, who wrote these 10 volumes of every word in the New Testament. The classical Greek, I mean, it's just, that was the books seminarians used to have. He didn't even know who Gerhard Kittel was. So I looked at him. I said, well, you're going to know because I'm going to send you my 10 volumes. And so finally, I sent them. I just got a note the other day. And he says, well, I don't know what he could say. Thank you. And they fit on my bookshelf. And that's where they'll stay for another 10 years until he has to get rid of them. And of course, today we have internet and other ways to get information that we don't have to have all those books.
Ron?
Yeah.
You were talking about the fact that if a parent goes along with a child, it's the mother. And with relation to your band activity type thing.
Mm-hmm.
With the downturn in the economy, are you seeing more fathers being involved with those young people?
Seeing more fathers what?
Being involved with the young people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a shift. There's a lot of pressure being put on by other cultural groups and so forth. I don't know, Nancy, what do you think?
I see a lot of young men taking care of children during the day. And I'm very curious about that. And of course, these are mostly poverty people. And I'm wondering the woman in the relationship is out work earning money, while the man is taking care of the children.
That's true, even in middle class, mm-hmm. where the men have been laid off, and they are the caregivers of the kids.
Same for universities, too. The women have jobs, and the men are taking care of children.
You see that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they got a job offer, and he doesn't get a job offer.
Right. So among the different cultural groups, though, I don't know how to, like among the Cambodians, who I do know somewhat. I mean, you got to go to Cambodia for the World Vision trip once. And the fathers tend to be around, but it's always, it's hard time. Oh, let me give you some advice. Anybody here have kids?
At home or away? Or out?
Well, according to Sirach, they're probably away if you didn't do this. He who loves his son. Now, again, this is very sexist. Son was the main thing. I'll put son or daughter. Will whip him often so that he may rejoice at the way he turns out. He who disciplines his son will profit by him. And he goes on and on about, if you don't do it, you're going to be one sorry parent or teacher. And that debate, by the way, is still going on, whether we spank or not spank, among social workers, among teachers, and I don't know about preachers, but it's just an interesting thing, isn't it?
Yeah, if you do it the
yes.
Way, you get the social service.
Use of wisdom, this is kind of a cute story. Our grandson, who's 8, we were up at 10 Mile Falls 3 weeks ago, and there are these two mothers with 4 children, like 5 to 7 years old, who'd gone up above the lookout on the overhang that was very dangerous. And we were very scared for them. Anyway, they came down and went back again. We're heading out, and our 8-year-old said, their rules are no rules, and their mothers don't love them enough.
Oh,
wow. Because
wow.
They can fall instantly when you get to 10 Mile Falls.
But wisdom from an 8-year-old.
Definitely.
Wow. Yeah, it'd be fun to hear some more of your wisdom stories. This one I'm going to end with because it has to do with health. And we just said nice things for the doctor and the pharmacist. He goes on concerning health. Better off poor, healthy, and fit than rich and afflicted in body. Health and fitness are better than any gold. And a robust body than countless riches. There is no wealth better than health of body, and no gladness above joy of heart. Death, this is my euthanasia quote, death is better than a life of misery, and eternal sleep than chronic sickness. So he's got kind of those kind of things in there, and some of the best treatment of how to deal with people who are poor, and it's worth a read, even if you don't agree, of course. I don't agree with whipping your kids, but he did, and that culture certainly did, if you're going to keep them in line. Well, I want to appreciate your sticking with this. The doctor quote I really wanted read, and you did that, and Proverb, since we're going to go eat, at least briefly, coffee time, is from the church fathers. And I know it was a church mother that said this, not a church father. They get credit for everything. Okay. All the world's food is divine love made edible. You hear it? It's gorgeous. All the world's food is divine love made edible. And so snack time, you know, these little things, of course, lunch, dinner, breakfast. And I think, at least up here, I've often felt that's exactly what I feel. People talking to me even though they don't know you, sharing love, the love of Christ. And once that is shared, then the possibility for change, transformation, is there. And what a joy yesterday, right? These goofy kids. And they're all dancing around. And I happen to know Roger Iverson very well from
PLU days, and his wife Cindy, who's a very accomplished musician, by the way. I don't know if she should play up here. And so we'll end with that. And then a cultural quote from Bob Dylan is, there's no success like failure, and failure is no success at all. Now you figure that one out. I always liked it. I understood failure, but it wasn't success. Okay, that's it.